Welcome to Regulating AI Podcast, hosted by Sanjay Puri. Join us each episode as we dive into the evolving world of AI governance with global leaders, exploring how to responsibly tackle AI's challenges while fostering innovation and balance. This podcast was recorded live in partnership with the World Summit AI event.
Welcome to the Regulating AI Podcast, where we bring global diverse leaders to frame sensible democratic policies around AI regulation. Today, we are thrilled to have Dr. Kevin Jones with us. Dr. Jones brings 30 years of experience working with corporations in framing industrial policies, human resource policies. Dr. Jones, thank you so much for being with us today.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Wonderful. Dr. Jones, you know we are at an AI conference. So we have a global audience for our guests. Tell them, how has your work changed with the advent of AI, especially in the workforce?
Well, the most active part of it is the assistant part of AI, whether it is with your email, whether it's writing a report, whether it's doing an analysis. AI is your partner in this process. And I found it to be very useful because while collaborating with humans is good as well, and still do that, of course, but I can ask any question. I can have a bit of a dialogue with AI. And what's best is I still decide what's best.
So you still decide what's best. Dr. Jones, there are concerns that people have because there have been all kinds of reports, McKinsey and IMF saying we might have transformation in employment, 30, 40, 50, 60%. Do you hear those concerns from corporations that you deal with? And how do you deal with those concerns? And how should corporations deal with those concerns?
Well, this is a ever-present reality. And not to minimize it in any way, shape, or form, but over time, everything changes and organizations transform, which means that, yes, job roles change as well. But my belief at this time is we're not talking mostly about displacement. We're talking about changing the way we work. Now, that is not necessarily exciting for people as well. However, it is a natural progression of technological usage and integration. And that's the best I can say. What I'm finding is that organizations are in a bit of a dilemma. They're making the investments in the technology, and they need to get some results from those technologies. At the same time, they may face resistance from internal to actually embrace the technology. So it's a tricky balance right now, as it is still fairly new in terms of widespread use. But at the same time, we've been knowing about this presence, or should we say progression, for quite some time.
So Dr. Jones, just to follow up on that point, do you believe change management is an important aspect of leaders who are trying to get this technology implemented in organizations?
Absolutely. This is a significant change project, or dare I say, organizational transformation. And what does that mean? It says we have to look at everything from the people, the processes, and the deployment of the technology to identify how we're going to work going forward. Some things we do right away, some things we do later. And that's another bit of a challenge is, as Cotter talks about this, creating a sense of urgency for change, with this, I think we might not work so much with urgency. I think we might want to work with little patience to allow people to become somewhat comfortable and or confident with the use of technology in this way that AI provides.
So Dr. Jones, you said that with this technology, maybe we need patience because the transformation is so huge. The challenge that companies are facing, the innovation, in, especially in AI, is happening so rapidly. At least in my lifetime, I have not seen. Just from even the time when ChatGPT came out in 2 years, you now have agents, agentic AI, you have multimodal, et cetera. So companies have this dilemma, and you obviously are a leader in working with them. Should I keep pace with technology? What should I do about my people? How do I bring them along? If I don't keep pace with technology, will my competitors get ahead? You said you are preaching, or you're telling them to be patient. How do they make that balance, the C-suites, the boards of these Fortune 500 companies? What is your message to them?
Yes, this is an ever-present dilemma.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we think about competitive forces, no one wants to be left behind.
Mm-hmm.
What's the term? FOMO, okay?
Sure.
Fear of missing out, mm-hmm. okay? And while there's always that risk, we also have to think about how a particular technology, AI in this case, actually advances our mission, our vision, our values, mm-hmm. our goals.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't think technology first. Here's the technology. Let's alter our work because of the technology. No, we identify what we're trying to do, and then we take the technology to enhance, to strengthen, to move us forward.
Mm-hmm.
And now, as we do that, we have to have a real good sense of who we are. What are we about? What are we trying to accomplish? And that should guide our deployment of technology, not the other way around. Oh, the technology's here. Let's adapt our business to that technology.
Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Jones, should companies make sure the technology adapts to their mission and values? Is that what you're saying, rather than the other way around?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That should be first. And I have a long period of time of understanding this. Mm-hmm. Those organizations that throw out everything because, wow, here's the shiny object. Mm-hmm. Let's go for the shiny object. That's not sustainable, because you want to build your capability with the technology. Mm. Not the technology being the capability, but you build your organizational capability with the technology.
So build the organizational capability with the technology. Now, what about making sure ethical values get integrated into this technology? Because, as you know, this technology has amazing potential for improving productivity, but there could be ethical challenges that kind of come with this. What do you guide, or what do you suggest or advise companies? How would they go about doing this, Dr. Jones?
Well, that's somewhat of an inflammatory question. And The reason why is that, unfortunately, many organizations do not really live the values that they profess, okay? If you have a strong set of values that are embedded in the culture of the organization, are modeled by leadership, and the organization's products and processes and everything that's done aligns with those ethics, then this is an easy, natural progression to bring the technology aligned with your ethics and values. Now, on the other hand, if you're willing to throw out your values, your ethics, for whatever it takes, or just get it done, well, then it doesn't matter. And I believe while disruption is going to be part of any change, that creates a negative disruption. I'll use the term.
Mm-hmm.
The negative disruption is resistance. Negative disruption is anger. Negative disruption is frustration. And some organizations are willing to do that. But I believe that over time, the sustaining organization is one that commits to their ethics, their values, and their basic beliefs, because that's what attracts people. That's what keeps people motivated. That's what keeps people giving their very best. But if you are simply willing to say, oh, well, here's the technology, whatever we said doesn't matter, then I can't see how we can help them, okay? I don't think that's right. Some people think that's right. I don't think it's right.
So organizations who have built-in ethical sets of values are going to be much better off in adopting this technology. If people are taking shortcuts just to get there, that's, you know, frustration, anger, as you said, could be the result. Dr. Jones, there are fears that because let's just take large language models, feed off the data on the internet, which has biases and things like that. From a workforce standpoint, what should be the concerns in terms of hiring, making sure there's equity in hiring and all those things that kind of get there? What do you suggest to companies that you work with to make sure this technology, even though very powerful, doesn't build in inequity, whether it's in biases or things of that nature?
Yes. Well, this is something I believe strongly. Leaders have to be continuous learners, okay? Now, it seems pretty obvious, but what I mean by that is that they have to really be voracious learners. And if they study very well, if they are continuously learning, they'll recognize that a diverse workforce, a workforce with many different views, different perspectives, is a stronger workforce versus one where we're just going to go with what is said. We're just going to follow the same direction. Whatever the boss says, we'll do that. That's not the type of organization that can compete in this challenging environment. You need to have a well of different thoughts, experiences, beliefs even, because when you mobilize those things, yes, it may be more difficult to bring them together, but when you are able to mobilize that diverse thinking, you can deliver much higher quality results. It's been proven over and over again.
So continue the diversity because it adds value. It's going to add to your bottom line. I think that's what you're saying. Companies that practice that are much going to be much, much more successful. Dr. Jones, you know, when we were in MBA school or even today, companies used to talk about a human-centric approach to work.
Yes.
Is AI going to change that, or are we still going to be a human-centric organization? What is your thought?
It's our choice. This is something I've said before to other groups. I said, well, we can let it just decide what we're going to do, or we can decide what we want it to do. And I do use the term it. Some people want to personalize the technology. I'm not one of those. It is a tool. It is a technology that is for our benefit and our use. And as long as we keep that at the forefront of our thinking, then we don't cede control of our organizations to the technology. And that will become more difficult to do if we reach AGI. But in the meantime, we're not at AGI. And since we're not at AGI, we have full control over how we deploy the technology. So my opinion very strongly is take that control, use that control. We are the ones that decide the direction, how the technology will enhance, strengthen, grow our organization, not the other way around.
So take control and strengthen the organization. Dr. Jones, we mainly talked about management, companies, et cetera. What should workers be looking at in this transformation age? What should they be doing? Let's think about from their end. What would you suggest?
Well, that's a difficult question because the workers often don't have the decision on the integration of a new technology. Okay, the technology appears, and now workers have to adapt. So this is maybe a large ask, but it says recognize that our work will change. Now, it's easy for me to say talking about it. It's much more difficult to experience it.
Yeah.
But it's the reality is that I can take my job, which sounds like not even a significant job compared to some people's work, a college professor. My job has changed radically from the time I started 36 years ago. And when I say radically, yes, radically. I do very few things the same way I did 36 years ago. So I says, well, 36 years ago, things changed. And that's the point. It doesn't have to be 36 years. It could be 2 years, 5 years, 1 year. Our work will change over time, and we, speaking of workers, have to be aware of the potential changes, prepare ourselves for those changes, seek ways to develop our capabilities, and never fall into the trap of saying, I've learned enough, I'll just do this job the same way. That has been dangerous forever. I can go back to when I was in college. People had factory jobs. And the workplace, the factory workplace changed. These were hardworking people. These people were good at what they did. However, the manufacturing work changed. The people that sustained were those that said, okay, I'll embrace this. I'll work with this change. I'll develop. And how do I know this? That was my father. My father was one of those factory workers who did not lose his job in the 1980s, because I remember him coming home talking about, we got these computer things now, and I'm going to learn all about these computers. Now, this is a man who did not grow up with computers. He had worked many years without it. But he saw that. He said, I'm going to learn it. I'm going to embrace it. And so he was able to adapt, while unfortunately some of his peers were not.
So I think the message you're saying is it also is now incumbent upon the workers to understand that self-learning, not just learning from companies, but self-learning in a fast-paced, changed environment is really incumbent upon them to stay ahead of the curve and create more value for themselves. Right, Dr. Jones?
Yes. The psychological contract for many years has been different, where there was a period of time where you could depend on the employer to take care of you.
Right.
Well, it's pretty simple. It's been true at least my entire career. It's not a selfish thing. You have to take care of yourself. You have to look at your career, your job, and say, how do I maximize my capability in this job? And it's a continuous process. And sometimes you have to push your employer to help you. Now, in the best case, the employer provides those resources to develop you. Like my job as a college professor, I'm continually offered resources to develop. But some jobs, it's not that way. So that says the responsibility does shift. While we might ideally say the employer should do it, for our own defense, we should take command of our own jobs, our own careers, see what we need to do, develop ourselves so that we can protect ourselves against potential adverse effects of changing dynamics of the workplace.
Well, that's some great advice. As you said, the work contract has changed, and let's take the bull by the horn, take our own destiny in our own hands. Dr. Jones, thank you so much. Your insight into the workforce, into industrial leaders, a changing and transformative timeline is very, very valuable, especially for our listeners around the globe who either are part of the change or are going to be impacted by the change. So thank you for being on the Regulating AI podcast. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, and I appreciate the conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Regulating AI podcast. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on the show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you'll never miss an episode, and leave us a 5-star review.